Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. On this edition, we're going to be speaking to New York-based author Susan X. Maha, and you'll hear the fabulous chat we had very, very shortly. But before we get to that, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what's been going on with me since we last chatted almost a month ago. First up then, the Amazon Lesbian Fiction Charts, and like everywhere else, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas in the Amazon Charts. I will be doing a little roundup of the Christmas books in a moment, but as well as Christmas books, there are of course just general books in the charts, because we haven't all gone Christmas crazy, not just yet. So riding high in the Lesbian Fiction Charts in the UK and the US is the new one from Lila Bruce called Love Bites. And it features a cover with a dog wearing sunglasses and a pearl necklace, which, you know, frankly, as I'm sure you'll all agree, is a stroke of genius, because who doesn't like a dog in sunglasses wearing a pearl necklace? It's the story of Ashley and Peyton, who meet up after 12 years apart. And back then, one broke the heart of the other. So the big question is, will Ashley and Peyton get back together? Now, I think I might know the answer because, you know, the book is a lesbian romance, but it is a runaway success, and so Lila clearly spins a darn good yarn. But one thing I have noticed, and I'd love American listeners to get in touch and let me know. American lesbian books often have lead protagonists called Peyton. Now, in the UK, I don't know anyone called Peyton, not one person. So is it a common name in the US generally, or is it just common in lesfic land? I'd like to know. I really would, because it keeps coming up. So tweet me if you are a listener in the US and let me know. Is Peyton a common name? I don't know. My tweet is at Claire Lydon. It couldn't be simpler. Also in the top five on both sides of the pond is Raven Cavallo with her book The Queen of Diamonds. It's got a baseball and a baseball mitt on the cover, so I assume baseball is involved, although the blurb is a bit vague on that subject, so I'm not sure. Also doing well in the US and UK, too, is the star of episode 9 of the Lesbian Book Club podcast, the very lovely Jay, and her new book is called Just Physical and doing very well, and it's part of her Hollywood series. So if you've read the first Hollywood book and you haven't read this one, dash out now and buy it. Dash, dash, dash. Of course, Patricia Highsmith's The Price of Salt is also doing extraordinarily well in the charts. And that's no surprise because the movie has been recently adapted and turned into the movie Carol. What did I say movie? I meant the book, obviously. I went to see the film and I thought it was incredible, but I haven't read the book yet. It is on my list of things to do, and it will be interesting to compare and contrast the book with the film, because obviously the movie has lots of staring, not very much dialogue, but it was masterfully adapted by, I think it was Patricia Nagy, I think. I read a great article with her talking about adapting the novel, so yeah, I'd be interested to read it. But let's have a chat about Christmas books now. And I'm pleased to say that my Christmas book, All I Want for Christmas, is still doing well in the UK and still selling a few copies all around the world as well. So that's really cool. If you bought it, thank you very much. And if you've reviewed it, and reviews are very important to authors, so if you've reviewed it, thank you, thank you, thank you. You are brilliant and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Like I said, though, Christmas stories are racing up the charts right now, because it is Christmas time. So if you are, you know, in the mood to read a Christmas story and fill up your Christmas heart with love and joy. I'm assuming if it's a Christmas book, it will fill your heart with love and joy. Then there's a few to choose from, obviously mine. But there's also Jade Winters has released a short romance called The Perfect Present, and that's doing very well on both sides of the pond, so probably worth a read, I would say. Amy Dunn, who's also been on the Lesbian Fiction Podcast, I think episode 5, she wrote a book last year, Seasons Meetings, which is a seasonal heart warmer, so that's well worth a look to. And I also like the look of Natalie Vivian's book, Christmas Carol. Now, I haven't read it, so I can't vouch for it, but calling your book Christmas Carol, stroke of genius, I'll tell you. I wish I thought of it first, but I didn't. So well done, Natalie Vivian. I like the cut of your jib. That's what I'm saying. And there's also, there's a slew of other ones. Jerry Hill's got one out. Something About the Big Blue. I should know this title, but I don't. But she's got a Christmas one out. It's got a Christmas moose or elk on the front or something like that. And Karen Coolmaker's got one out called Comfort and Joy. So there are a host of options if you want to read a Christmas book and get, you know, jump into Christmas, embrace it with both hands. But that's the chart rundown for December, and it's the last time we'll do it in 2015. I know, but fear not, I will be back next year with loads more podcasts, so we'll do it all over again next year, and it will be the same. It'll just be a 6 at the end of the year instead of a 5. So no need to panic. Things aren't going to change. If you're a change avoider, don't worry. Don't worry. It will be fine. So what have I been up to then in the past few weeks since I last spoke to you? Well, my wife and I went away for a week to Lyon in France, which was a really great time we had. It's a fantastic city. Got a lovely sort of old town bit. Some lovely bars and restaurants, and views across the city are amazing. And it's cut by two rivers, which is really cool. So, it's very pretty. And we stayed in an Airbnb apartment, which is the first time we've done that. And that was really cool. And it was also happily just around the corner from the L Bar in Lyon, which is a lesbian bar. So we got friendly with the people in there. We might have frequented it once or twice and had too many shots of tequila one night, but that's not our fault. That's the bar woman who kept buying us shots. But anyway, yes, we had a great time in Lyon. The only thing we didn't like was their over-reliance on praline. Now, I'm allergic to nuts, so I can't eat praline. But in Lyon, they love praline. I mean, I've never been anywhere that loves praline as much as Lyon. We went to one restaurant and there were 7 options and I couldn't eat one of them. Praline everywhere. Everywhere you look, praline. So, you know, in one way, the holiday was good for my waistline because I didn't eat many desserts. But having said that, it was probably balanced out with all the wine and cheese I ingested. So, yeah, balance. That's what I had in my life, balance. Also this week, as I said, we also went to see the movie Carol, starring Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. And I'm sure you've heard a lot about this movie and how it's set to win all the Oscars. And if it doesn't, frankly, there's something very wrong with the world. It's a brilliant movie. It looks gorgeous. It's set in the 1950s and the costume design and the set design is amazing. It looks like it's shot on like a grainy camera. It's super stylized. But on top of all that, as I said before, the script is fantastic. Knows when to pull back and just, you know, but obviously he wouldn't be able to do that without the two leads, Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara, who act it beautifully. Both my wife and I came out of the cinema entranced by the whole film, but also emotionally drained, I have to say, because it really does take it out of you. It draws you in, the movie, and it's very emotionally draining, but well worth going to see. And it's just so nice to see lesbian representation on the big screen, especially in such a quality film and such a massive film. So it's a big thumbs up from me. And I'm now a confirmed Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara fan. And it's incredible as well how much Mara evokes Audrey Hepburn in the final scenes. She doesn't so much in the beginning, but as the film wears on, she just becomes Audrey Hepburn, which I suppose is the point, because she, her character develops and grows up a bit. So I guess that's what that's trying to convey. I got that. Also this month, I've managed to pack in 2 Christmas parties so far, which has been great. I've got a third to do, and we're hosting Christmas this year as well. which we are really looking forward to. Because, you know, normally we're away at friends or families for Christmas, but this year we're hosting it for some friends. So it will be nice to just be at home. We've got a tree up. We've sort of done bits and pieces of shopping and stuff. So we've got a turkey being delivered on the 22nd. So yeah, it'll be good. I'm looking forward to it. So we are ready for Christmas to begin. Hurrah! And as well as that, all of that, I've been doing a bit more writing. I've started to write a new series. I'm gonna be writing a new series, and I'm also gonna be writing a follow up to All I Want for Christmas, because I've had a lot of requests from people saying we'd love to know more about Tori and Holly. So I'm gonna write it. I'm going to do that, and I'm actually going to be starting it next week. So I'm hoping to get that out fairly soon, actually. It possibly won't be a full-length book. It's possibly going to be like a novella to follow up and to see what they're getting up to in the new year. So watch this space, but I think there will be another All I Want book in the very close future. Anyway, enough about me. Let's move on to the interview with the lovely Susan X. Maher. And I have to say, Susan was fantastic, and there's a lot of laughing in this interview, having just listened to it back, so I hope you enjoy it. So joining me today on the Lesbian Book Club is lesbian fiction author Susan X. Maher, who's been writing lesbian fiction for a fair few years now, and has amassed a mighty impressive back catalogue in the process. This year has seen her release smash hits The Right Time and Homecoming, and I'm sure there are more to come, which Susan can tell us all about. She is talking to us today from her home city of New York, where she lives with her partner Carrie, and she's previously lived all around the US. So welcome, Susan.
Thanks very much, Claire.
How was that introduction? Is there anything you would like to add?
Only the pronunciation of my last name.
Okay, I did wonder, did I get that right? Go on then, give us how it's meant to.
I will freely admit that it is a difficult one.
Okay.
The phonics, English phonics do not work on that name. It's pronounced Maher.
Oh, Maher. Completely wrong, I apologise.
No one has ever gotten it right.
Maher, I see. I wouldn't have got that from there, but there you go.
You drop the E and you drop the G.
Right. Okay.
And there you have it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. But everything else was tip top.
Tip top.
Tip top. I just thought I'd drop an English phrasing in there for you,
I love English phrasing.
Just to tickle you.
I love anything that's slightly different than what I'm used to. So.
Cool. So What have you been up to today, so far?
Today, I've been up to absolutely nothing.
Perfect.
I'm on a new internet diet, and I have been limiting myself to reading news and social media only once a day. And generally, I limit myself to about an hour. But today, because I knew we were going to talk, I didn't want to get started writing. So I have just been playing on the internet madcap fashion.
Okay. have you bought anything? Have you done some BuzzFeed quizzes?
That's all. But I know all the gossip, international gossip. I can tell you about soccer players in Spain and all sorts of junk.
Okay. So. Go on then. What was the most interesting tidbit you picked up this morning?
I learned absolutely nothing today. That's why I am trying to limit myself, because I'm spending way too much time reading things that don't in any way make me a better person.
Yeah, they don't stick in your brain. And how is your... go on.
Nothing sticks. It's just... it's trash.
Yeah. And how is that internet diet going? Because that's... Good.
Apparently I can stick to something that I've firmly decided to do. So it's just once a day, and it's only in the morning. I don't look at the news after normally 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And it's letting me sleep better, because there's nothing worse than right before you go to bed, read about, you know, some horrible thing happened that you worry about. So yeah. I'm not going to read about them.
Yeah, no, it's a good policy to live by, and also it makes you far more productive during the day
does.
If you're not checking things every 5 minutes. So
yes. I also don't watch news on television. I stopped that 20 years ago.
Right.
So I don't have the images. So I don't read the words and I don't have the images. I should just be able to dream nicely and not be worried.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. I like that phrasing. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So paint a picture of where you're speaking to us from today, where you're sitting and, you know, the
way. Well, I have a little, it's a bedroom, but I use it as an office because it's a bedroom for a very small child, I think. It's about, I'd say 10 feet by 8 feet. That's a small bedroom.
Yeah.
And I have a window, but it looks out onto trees that still have leaves on them. We have some pretty tall trees. I live right across from Prospect Park in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very nice view of the park, but it's from my bedroom window. And I don't like to sit in bed and write.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm mostly looking at a blank wall. And if I turn my little head, I can see trees that incorrectly have leaves still on them.
Yeah.
They should not have leaves.
No, they should not have leaves.
But no one has told them. We actually got a beautiful bird called a painted bunting in our park the other day.
Mm-hmm.
That bird normally doesn't go north of Arkansas, which is almost 1,000 miles from here.
Mm-hmm.
So, again,
you can't
screw with the climate and expect everything to stay the same.
No, the times they are changing, or the planet is changing.
The birds are going to go 1,000 miles out of their home area, and then in a couple of weeks they're going to say, "What the heck happened? How did it get so cold? Where's the leaves?"
Yeah. Yeah, very confused birds wandering around New York. Yeah. So tell me a bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
All of a sudden, in about 1999, I was a sort of an indifferent watcher of Xena Warrior Princess, the television show,
mm-hmm.
and I started reading some fanfic from it. I liked the fanfic better than I liked the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read a piece by Missy Good about two modern-day characters who had the attributes of the characters from the show. And I thought, you know what, I might be able to do that. So I tried, and I just really loved it. And that was the first words of fiction I ever wrote. And I don't think I've gone more than 3 or 4 days since then that I haven't written something.
Right, wow. And what year was that again, when you started writing?
I think it was 99. It was either 98 or 99.
Right, okay. And this was your San Francisco series, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I worked on that pretty much exclusively for maybe 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And wrote, you know, many, many thousands of pages. And then I thought, I should do something else too. So then I started writing standalone novels.
Mm-hmm. So the two characters were, it came out of Xena fanfic, which did spawn a lot, didn't it? As a lot of fanfic for Xena.
A whole lot.
Yeah.
And most of my work from that period is up at the Royal Academy of Bards. I think it's academyofbards.org.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody wants to read my early work that has not been edited, it's posted there.
Right, but then later on you started publishing that as
yes.
the series of novels, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and the ones that I publish have been properly edited. I like them much better.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a massive difference there?
I hope there is.
Yeah.
But readers don't notice it.
Yeah.
No, you spend so much time editing, and there'll be a few people who notice every error, and 99% of the people don't notice any difference between good editing and no editing at all. Kind of frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm pretty hot on that, but I think that people always, there are certain sort of spelling errors, aren't there, that people always pick up.
Yes.
But, you know, luckily I don't suffer from that too much, so
yes.
But yeah, that's good.
I'm a pretty good speller, so I don't, in that area, I don't leave a lot for an editor to do. But, you know, there's a whole lot that editors add, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
After I've had a book well edited, I feel so much better about it. And I guess I'm my best critic, so I should be happy with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I read your most recent work before this interview. I really enjoyed it. It's a tale of a love that has, thousands of obstacles thrown in the way, it seems. And it follows your... Yeah, it's called The Right Time. And it follows the two protagonists over a course of 10 years, which I really liked because you don't often get stories with that length of time following the characters. And you said it's a story that you've had with you for a long time. Started off as a short story, right?
Right.
And then you went back and revisited it and fleshed it out. So tell me a bit about that.
Actually, I did that three different times. I wrote a short story, I don't remember the year, probably 2002 or 2003, something like that, for the Royal Academy of Arts.
Okay.
And it was a challenge that you were supposed to write a story with, I think, 30 or 40 words in it, the words that they gave you to use. And they were goofy words, you know, like pink nightgown, and, spider bite, and things like that.
Right, how funny.
Yeah, so I wrote the story just to get those words in it. And it was relatively short. And then I looked at it afterwards, and I thought, I really like the story, and I really like the characters, and I think they've got a lot more to say. So I continued to write, and probably, I don't know, 40, 50, 60,000 words later, I posted it on the web. But then I thought, you know, I didn't do a good enough job. So a few years later, I rewrote it completely, finished it, and thought, no, I still didn't do a good enough job. So I did it again about 2 years ago and was still unhappy with it. So I hired an editor who would help me go through it chapter by chapter and really rip it apart. So I would say from the original to the current one, there's very little overlap of words, but the story is basically the same.
Right, okay.
So I've never worked longer or harder on a book.
And are you happy with how it is now?
I am.
Good.
I am. Thank God, huh?
Yeah. You need to just walk away now. Put it down.
Yeah, if I wasn't happy with this last time, that was going to be it.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it.
What star sign are you? I'm just curious.
Gemini,
right, okay. I'm not sure if they're known for their perfectionism, are they?
I don't know if they are, but I have that.
You have, yeah. Maybe you've got Virgo rising.
I think.
Yeah.
I haven't looked.
And the story covers the topic of alcoholism in quite some depth. Making it not your typical lesfic romance book. So what made you choose that topic and in particular?
I'm not even sure why I chose that topic. I don't remember the first thing that piqued my interest about that. But all of a sudden, I had a teenage alcoholic and another young woman who was the child of alcoholics.
Mm.
So I never know why things pop into my head. They just pop, and I usually listen to them. Luckily, I'm myself not an alcoholic, so I luckily don't have personal experience of it. But, you know, I don't think you can go through life and not know a lot of alcoholics.
Sure, yeah.
Something we do as humans.
Yeah. It's a very accessible drug.
It's a very accessible drug. And they can advertise it on television.
Yeah. Yeah, because your knowledge of, you know, the whole AA system and everything was very in-depth, so that's just a lot of research that you did for that.
A bit. I also have friends who have struggled with alcoholism most of their lives, and
right.
Some who... you know, successfully quit drinking long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I have one friend who's been in AA for a good 30 years, and she goes every week for 30 years.
Right.
So, you know, people need different levels of help and different kinds of help, but mm-hmm. if you really want to, you can get the help.
Yeah.
And it's amazingly reasonably priced. AA is free.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very much so, yeah.
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 So I would agree that it's not your typical lesbian romance, but I don't think any of my books are a typical lesbian romance.
Okay. Because that was my next question, was if, do you cover, because that was the first book I've read of yours, and right. and not won't be the last. Okay. So are your other books covering sort of gritty subjects as well?
Not necessarily, no. But all of them have a ton of character development.
Right.
I really hope that none of my characters are anywhere close to the same at the end of a book as they were at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, it could be all sorts of things. It's usually, you know, relatively small things, family dynamic things, you know, job things, insecurities, the things that most of us have. But I like small changes that are incremental and believable.
Yeah.
Which it takes a lot of pages to get that done, for me at least. I'm sure more skilled writers could do it in fewer pages, but I do it as well as I can, and tends to take me a while.
Yeah, one thing that stood out for me with the book at the right time was the character development. It was done very slowly, but with great assurance. And right. You did warn me it was a long book, but it didn't seem too long. So, but this is a normal thing. You think? Do you write sort of longer than your normal lesfic books?
Most of my books are between 120,000 and 140,000 words.
All right,
that's
okay.
Big.
Yeah.
Big.
You should charge way higher for them, right?
By the word.
Yeah.
Oh, you want the 80,000? Okay.
Yeah.
You're not gonna have. There's only gonna be one character. All of it himself.
Yeah. And the director's cut will cost you $20. Yeah.
Yes. Extra. And there's pictures.
So, but in the right time, you painted great pictures of the various places the characters lived, especially in the south where Hennessy lives. It was a place that I've never really been, but I could really picture it. So, have you been sort of have you done a lot of research around the places in America? Have you travelled extensively around the country?
Both. Hennessy lives in South Carolina, and specifically around Hilton Head and Beaufort, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a Beaufort, but that's in North Carolina, and they are not to be confused. Those are two different cities.
Right.
Spelled exactly the same, pronounced differently.
I could be very confused, yeah.
Yeah. Very American. So I've probably been there 20 times, 15, 20 times in my life.
Okay.
So I've been there quite frequently.
Yeah.
And I love it down there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not crazy about the politics.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy about some of the very overt racism I've seen there, but the people who I have met are generous and kind, and they can cook. Boy, they can cook. So I like it a lot.
Right. And all the times you've been down there, it's just to go, you know, sort of go on vacation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife and I used to play golf, so we would go there in the winter. We used to live in Chicago, and we would go to South Carolina to play golf in the winter for our winter vacation.
Right. Okay.
But we gave up golf, so we don't go as much.
Why'd you give up golf?
Oh, I don't know. you know, it took like 6 hours to play. And it was hard to get a tee time, and we weren't country club people, so
right.
You know, don't belong to a club here in America. It is not easy to play.
Okay.
And we lived in big cities, you know, in New York. I'm sure there are public courses, but I can't imagine waiting in line for one of them. So
yeah, no, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. It's something I'm considering. You know, taking it up. Seems though, you know, it's
public courses, and you have a whole lot of them.
Yeah. Maybe in a few years, you know, when I like walking, so apparently it's a good walk ruin. So
there's a book that I read a few years ago called A Good Walk Spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to play pitch and putt when I was little.
Yeah.
So I'm not bad at that, and I did beat my wife at it once, and she still hasn't forgiven me. So you know, maybe.
You can pitch and putt. You can play golf.
Okay.
The hardest part is the putting and the pitching.
Right.
See you there.
Cool. So you've written, I think I counted 15 standalone books.
Ah,
Correct me if I'm wrong.
I can't disagree with that.
No, okay.
I'm not sure that it's right, but I can't disagree.
And as we mentioned earlier, the I Found My Heart in San Francisco series, that you, so far up to 19 books.
Correct.
So every title in the San Francisco series starts with a progressive letter of the alphabet.
It does.
The first was Awakenings, the second Beginnings, and you're currently on Synchronicity, which is 19.
Right. Trust is coming out probably in February or March.
Right. And are these all...
Then we get to the difficult letters.
Yeah. that was going to be one of my questions, actually. What are going to be the titles for X and Z?
I didn't think this through.
No.
When I started writing.
So are these all... they're all full-length novels, all these books?
They are.
Yeah.
They are. They're not as big as my regular novels. These are usually closer to 100,000 words, but they're still pretty big.
That's pretty big, yeah. That's still substantial.
Especially when you're talking mainly about two people. That's a billion words about two women.
Yeah. Have you counted up the amount of words you've written in this series?
I have not, but I did put it all into a single document once because I wanted to do some search and, you know, finding names and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my poor little computer basically said, I don't think so. Rethink this plan.
Yeah. So if you could wind back the clock, do you think you'd just go for the vowels in the alphabet and leave out the consonants?
That would have been intelligent, yes.
Yeah. Was it always that it was always your intention to go for the full 26 letters?
You know, it wasn't, but I started writing and posting on the internet, and I would finish one little part and I would name it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would do the next one, and some individual said, why don't you do 26 books? And I said, that's a darn good idea.
You still friends?
we weren't friends. It was a stranger.
Oh, okay, on the internet.
Yeah. So, I was way too malleable when I first started writing.
But quite...
I think I believed it would be easier than it has been, you know?
Right.
It's literally been 16 years I've been doing this.
Yeah, it's a long time, but... Pretty cool, though, that your characters, you know, will grow with you and
well, I am embarrassed to admit how little they've aged. I believe they are 2 years old.
Oh, they're only two.
I truly did mean for them to age as I wrote them, but that just hasn't happened.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to go with what the characters tell you, don't you?
Well, I put a microscope on a relationship,
mm.
And when you put a microscope on it, the molecules get really big, so small things just take up pages and pages and pages.
Yeah. So how are you feeling about sort of writing when you come to writing the next one? Are you like all fired up? You still got ideas for them?
I am, and I have them all plotted out, so I know what's going to happen in all of them.
Okay.
I just don't have names for them. But when I'm in the right mood, I'm extremely happy to start a new one.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't do it just because it's time. I have to be in a Jamie and Ryan mood.
Right. Okay.
And I've been slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to stop. I am going to finish.
Right, okay. And do you have a plan of when that finish line is?
Well, I try to write one a year, so...
Okay.
Any luck at all? I think that's 6 more years.
Yeah, 6 more years, yeah. And what are you going to do when you finish? We have a little sort of Ryan and Jamie party.
I should. I'll go to San Francisco and do something fantastic.
You should, yeah, absolutely. And
all the places that I used to write about by name, because when I first started writing it, I wrote all realism. Every place that they went was a real place, and they went on the day that it actually happened.
Right.
It was insane. They were in college when it started, and I had looked up real college classes. They took the real classes. They had to go on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10 to 11:30, and I couldn't have. Oh, I'm a lunatic. So over the years, I've stopped that a little.
Yeah.
Still try to keep. Their day like a real day would be.
Okay, and do they go to like the real bars in San Francisco? Because
I think
I think they change all the time too, right?
But yeah, there's hardly any left.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what they started with and what's there now, the restaurants, the bars, everything is so different. San Francisco is a completely different place than it was in 1999.
Mm, yeah.
It's now just oligarchs and billionaires.
Yeah. I think it was around that time that I first went. So I agree. I went back about 3 years ago, and it was very different.
Very different.
Yeah.
The people who used to live there in the neighborhood for the last 50, 75 years, you know, family after family, they are gone.
Mm-hmm.
They've all had to move much further out.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So that the Facebook billionaires can take over their homes.
And I was speaking to a fan of yours over the weekend, and she wanted me to ask you, are Ryan and Jamie based on real people? And if so, can she have their phone numbers?
I wish. And if they were, I would have their phone numbers for myself. My wife and I are pretty traditional, but we could get into a four-way with
them. You know, you've got to make some exceptions sometimes, haven't you?
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
They would be on our wish list.
And what's your next? As you said, you've written a whole host of standalone books as well. So have you got another standalone book coming out soon?
Of course I do.
Of course.
I usually publish a Ryan and Jamie book at the same time I publish a standalone.
Okay.
And so that will probably, as I said, be in either February or March.
Okay, so not long to wait.
I have two books that are in exactly the same position. I just have to decide which one to finish. I think I'm going to finish one about Chicago in 1967, right at the beginning of the student protest movement and the rise of feminism and all sorts of stuff was going on then.
All right, well, that sounds really interesting. Yeah,
well, this was a bit before my time, so I've had to do a lot of research for that. But mm-hmm. We have a great resource in Brooklyn, actually in my neighborhood, called the Lesbian Herstory Archives.
Oh, how cool!
Yeah, it's in a little brownstone about five blocks from my house. And so I've been going over there and hanging out and reading magazines and newspaper articles and books from the time.
Mm-hmm.
Really getting a feeling for what it would be like to just figure out that lesbians existed and that you were one
mm-hmm.
in 1967.
Cool. And that's very convenient as well, isn't it? Just around the corner.
I knew it was in Brooklyn, but I didn't know it was so close to my house. And when I looked up the address, I was like, wow, it's Kismet.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I will write that book. So what's that one going to be called?
It's called Summer of Love.
Summer of Love. Okay. We'll look out for that.
I have another one about two chefs in the Soho neighborhood of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is called Chef's Special.
Okay.
So it's one or the other, but I think it's going to be the one about Chicago.
Okay. We'll look forward to that. So obviously you're packing in a lot of writing to your days. So what's your normal writing process during a typical day?
During a typical day, I get up and consume my 1 hour of internet, and then I try to start writing. And I try to take a break every half hour to 45 minutes, and I like to keep at it until my wife gets home from work. And if I'm really, really on a good roll, I give her a head nod and keep going.
Okay.
There are many days that I will write 12 hours.
12 hours? Wow. That's,
I just love it. I go to another place. I'm in this place, and I'm having too much fun to leave.
Right. Wow. I'm impressed. I'm impressed and humbled.
All that often,
but it
does. It's really
nice. So do you have a sort of a word count that you have to hit, or you just...
Nope. No.
If you're writing for 12 hours, do you know how many words you'd write then?
Oh, at least 10,000.
Right. Yeah. I've yet to have my first 10,000 word day. So.
I don't know if it's a good thing. I think it could be a sign of mental illness. If you can back away from the computer, you'll have a better life. All in all, I think.
No, I don't know. I think I'd probably take the next 2 days off, just feel really smug.
Well, I've had periods. It, was this last winter where I did that for about 4 days straight.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I had to take a couple of days where I didn't go anywhere near the computer.
Yeah, because it's very draining, isn't it? You know, like
it's a frenzy.
Yeah, because you have to make so many decisions when you're writing fiction, and
truly a frenzy.
Yeah.
But I do that mostly when I not at the very beginning of a book, but after I've really gotten a good feel for who the characters are, mm-hmm. and then they just start revealing themselves to me, and I just feel like I have to get it all down.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And so you try to write every sort of Monday to Friday every day?
I definitely write every Monday through Friday, and when I can sneak it in on the weekends, I do that too.
Okay.
And I try to always be working on three books at the same time, because there's different parts of my brain that are required to work on books,
uh-huh.
and sometimes one part is more accessible than another.
Right.
Okay. So if I'm feeling creative, I'll work on a new book, and if I'm feeling being a task mistress, I'll edit one. And if I don't feel very intelligent or creative at all, I will listen to one. That's how I proofread them.
Okay, right.
I put them on a little app and listen to it while I look at the words on the page.
Ah.
And having both of those senses being stimulated at the same time finds words that you never would have found just by reading.
Yeah, oh, that's really interesting. I've never heard of anybody
highly
doing
recommend
that.
It.
Yeah.
Time-consuming, but if it's important to you to get the tiny errors, I did this for a friend not long ago who mm-hmm. was publishing a book, and I found 75 errors that her publishing company had missed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
that's really a lot.
But it had been read like three times.
Yeah.
There's just so easy to miss them.
Yeah.
Human beings aren't made to read like this.
Mm-hmm. No.
Right. And I don't think readers would have noticed hardly any of them.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't glaring errors. They were tiny.
Yeah. Now, I had that same thing with the last book that I just published. I think there was probably about 15 errors, and I sent it out to 10 early readers, and they picked up a few things, but one reader picked up the lot, and I hadn't seen it because I wrote it, so you can't
always
pick
true.
Them up.
There's always one sharp-eyed person.
Yeah.
Everything. I always wonder if they really enjoy the story at all or if they're just looking at the words.
But whatever it is, we're grateful for them.
Well, the nice thing about doing it this way, too, is if my wife's in the right mood, she can listen to it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way that somebody can help you if they really want to help, but they don't otherwise, they're not otherwise editors.
Yeah, yeah. So what app is that that you use for doing that?
It's called, let me look at my phone, I think it's called VoiceDream.
VoiceDream, okay.
VoiceDream, yeah. Okay. It's an app that I have on my telephone.
Okay. Good to know.
And it's really cool.
So I'm guessing that at the end of a book, you don't panic and think, oh, my God, what am I going to write next? Because because you've got, like, a few on the go, right?
I have never panicked about that.
No?
Actually, I came up with ideas for two new books just last week. I try to have 5 or 6 in the hopper that I have just a very rough idea of. And I've got some that have been in my list for 5 years that
okay.
I just haven't had time to get to.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I have to be in the right mood. There's one that I was going to write that was going to be really, really depressing. And I just haven't been in a mood to be depressed. So I hope I don't get to write that for a long
yeah,
time.
I hope so.
I don't see any reason for taking a perfectly good mood and ruining it with a depressing book.
No. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to write something a bit different, isn't it? But, no,
it
I agree.
Is.
Yeah.
I love to write different things. Two books ago, I wrote kind of a suspenseful book, and that was my first.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. It was a little more, I had to focus a lot more on the plot. But it was nice to use sort of a different muscle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is your name, is it a pen name, or that is your real name?
That is my real name-ish.
Right.
My real name is Susan Maher,
yep.
But when I was a child, my parents mistakenly gave me the middle name of Marie, which I did not like. So when I was about 4 or 5, I said, I'm done with this, Marie. I'm going to change it to X. And they said, well, you can't do that. And I said, yeah, I can. So I just started using X then. So I basically used it all my life, even though it took me until I was an adult to be able to change it legally.
So it is actually your legal name now?
It's on my passport.
Oh, wow.
So did... Nice to make yourself promises when you're a child and follow up on them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, you knew what you wanted at a young age, and yeah. That's a good thing.
Well,
yeah.
At least I knew what I didn't want.
Yeah.
Around the time that my mother told me that one day I would grow up and get married, I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have children, but I'm going to get married. No, I'm not going to get married.
Right.
And she said, why? And I said, because I don't want a husband. And she laughed, thought that was so silly.
Prophetic.
Laugh later on.
No. They don't tend to, do they?
No. She thought that was an all-round bad idea.
Yeah.
She kind of came around. Yeah.
Good. And what do you think of the explosion in lesbian fiction over the last few years?
All good.
Yeah.
The more the merrier. Yeah.
Yeah.
More people just bring more readers.
Hmm.
And I find that most people who read less fic read a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I agree. Because people often say to me, well, why are you friends with the people that, you know, the other authors? Aren't they your competition? No.
It would be if there were only 5 or 6 lesbians in the world.
Exactly, yeah.
And more than that, just in my building.
That's because you're in Brooklyn, though, right?
That's true.
Yeah. And are you an avid reader of lesfic yourself?
I was. But now I read mostly either short fiction that's about whatever or nonfiction. I read a lot of history. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Yeah.
We don't tend to use it, what we've learned. But I still read it.
No.
So, yeah, I just don't have time, and I don't like to be influenced by other people's ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you never know. You know, stuff can get in, and all of a sudden you're writing somebody else's book. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And what's the best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
I would say the best piece of advice I've been given is to write what you know. But I tweak that a little bit to make it write what you'd like to know.
Right.
So I figure out something that interests me and then make that the focus of a book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, that's a good piece of advice. I like that.
Yeah. So, I wrote about a person who was a landscape architect just because I really like landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to learn a lot about it. Actually, I took a couple of online courses in it. So little things like that.
Right. And now you can do your garden, so you're all good.
If I had a garden, I could do one.
Right. You'd be there.
And
final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose?
Well, I would not like to be a child of any writer because writers are nuts. Present company included. But if you're asking who I might like to be around a lot,
mm-hmm.
I'd probably choose one of the short fiction writers that I read a lot. I read, I like Alice Munro, I like Laurie Moore, I like Jhumpa Lahiri, and somebody from your side of the pond, Tessa Hadley. Do you know her?
I don't know her name.
I love her short fiction.
Right.
And then I also like Jane Austen and George Eliot. And, oh, my gosh, I've not mentioned a man, have I?
There's a theme. There's a running theme.
That's really not true. I read a lot of men writers, but when you ask the question, all I can think of is women.
Yeah, no, well,
yeah.
That's okay. That's good.
I know that one.
But we're down with that on the Lesbian Book Club, you know. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Susan. This has been really awesome. And
a great time, Claire.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for taking the time. And I look forward to your the new books, The Summer of Love and Chef Special, was it?
Yes. chef's special.
All right, there you go. Good memory for book titles, clearly. All right, cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks again for having me.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. I forgot to ask Susan where you can find out more about her. So if you do want to find out more about Susan, and I would urge you to go and find out more, you can find her on Twitter at SusanX, or you can find her on the web, www.susanxmeagher.com. That's SusanXmeagher.com. And if you would like to dip into any of my books, All I Want for Christmas, London Calling, This London Love, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, or any of the other digital outlets. I am there. I'm also on Twitter, so come and follow me there, at Claire Lydon, very cryptic. And I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/claire.lydon. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It is much appreciated, and make sure you tune in to The Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip. Join me next time for more hot book club action, where I will be interviewing UK author Carrie Hunter, so don't miss it. In the meantime, have a great Christmas and holiday season, and I'll see you in 2016. Ta-ra!